Well, it's good to see you again. Yeah. Anne sends her love, by the way, her greetings. She's in Brisbane at the moment. Her sister is dying, and has been for quite some time, but the doctors have given her just a couple of weeks to live. And so Anne's there with her, just sitting and being there. In the meantime, you can feel sorry for me. The house is so quiet. It is boring. It's just me in the house. But fortunately, Christmas Day, we had my two daughters and their husbands, and eight of our 10 grandchildren all together. And that was anything but boring. It was not quiet either. It was quite noisy. It was just great fun. I really enjoyed that. Well, I'm here to say I'm going to break my own tradition. I had a tradition for many years that at Christmas time, I would preach about Jesus' death and resurrection. And at Easter time, I would preach about Jesus' birth. I just like to be difficult. But I didn't want people to get into a routine. You know, the old traditional thing, yeah, it's Christmas, we'll talk about the birth, you know. But this year I'm going to do that. I want to talk about something that I think has been very commonly overlooked in Scripture. And if you want to read along with me, it's in Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Matthew chapter 2. It's a little passage that is actually more significant than we normally think. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on the way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. We hear that story every year, don't we? But don't often think about it. I don't think it's appreciated for what it's worth. Now, let me first of all correct. There's nothing in Scripture that says that there were three wise men. It doesn't say how many. We assume three because there are three gifts mentioned. All right? That's verse 11. But there are, in fact, three questions we should ask about this story as we read it. Number one, who were the wise men? And I'm not talking about their names, because that's a traditional thing. It's not in Scripture. Two, what was the star? And three, what has this story for us? So very logical approach, okay? You've got to forgive me. I spend all my time these days teaching in Bible school, and so I have this certain approach that's teaching rather than preaching. Who were the wise men? Wow. How many have heard it said these were magicians? From this word magi. Magician sort of fits in with magician, doesn't it? So they were magi. They were not magicians. A better description would be Oriental scientist. I think that sounds much better. Now, Oriental, obviously, because they're coming somewhere from the Middle East, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And scientists, because they were people who observed nature. Got to remember, science began with Christian people observing God's creation. That's the heart of true science. The word magi or magus was originally given to the priests and wise men of the Medes, the Persians, and the Babylonians. And we often refer to that as the Medo-Persian Empire. So these are people from the center of the Near East, if you, from a European perspective. I love that. Near East, because it's nearer to Europe. Far East, because it's a far long way away from Europe. How many of us come from Europe? You know, for most of us, the Near East is like Indonesia. And the Far East might be Persia. Well, the equivalent. Iran, Iraq, and so forth. Now, Matthew Henry, in his commentary many, many years ago, wrote this. They were originally a peculiar class of philosophers of Persia who devoted themselves to study, particularly of medicine and astronomy. And these, however many there were wise men, scientists coming from Arabia. Now, it's probably worth noting in Daniel 5:11-12 that Daniel was appointed a chief amongst the Magi. So it's not a magician. He was a prophet, but a wise man who observed God's creation. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, in recognition of this man who could interpret the writing on the wall, you know, all that sort of stuff that he did, spending a night hobnobbing it with the lions. Interesting character. He was the chief of the Magi. So natural scientists. And when they saw an unusual star, their attention was fixed. Anyone been out in the last month to look at a comet going over? How many people go out when they talk about there's this particular sun, that it's closest to, the Earth is closer to the sun than it normally is, that sort of thing. Anything that's in the sky, I walk outside at night just to check the property before I go to bed. I always check up at the stars. And if I see a satellite going over, oh, that's interesting. Wonder who owns that one? What's it doing up there? This is what these guys were doing. This star, unexpected, unusual, never seen before, arose in the sky and they wanted to know what's going on. That's where we're coming from. Now, let me take it a little step further. One commentator, Phil Greetham by name, points out that the Magi were like specialists appointed by the government to give advice. And not only that, from time to time, the king of a particular kingdom would send some of these wise men as his envoy to another place. It could well be that the rulers of Media or Persia said, I don't know what this star is. You guys go and check it out. And they were given a royal commission to go and find the king of the Jews. Oh, that sounds good. Now, I'm talking about Persia, but the reality is these guys could have come from China, because Chinese records note the existence of this star at this same point in time. So they could have travelled a very long way. Now, if they were from Persia, it could well be that they were fully aware of some of the scriptures. Now, I'm just going to pick out two of these. Do you remember the story about Balaam? And Balaam had a very intelligent donkey. Right. Well, let me read to you from Numbers 24:15-19. Then Balaam uttered this, his oracle. The oracle of Balaam, son of Beor, the oracle of one whose eyes see clearly, the oracle of one who hears the words of God and has knowledge from the Most High, who sees a vision from the Almighty, who falls prostrate and whose eyes are open. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will arise out of Israel. And we could go on from the story. I wonder how much these men knew about Balaam's prophecy. A star will arise. Or Daniel 2:44. And Daniel records, in the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but will itself endure forever. So we're talking about a king and a kingdom that's going to come quite miraculously. I wonder whether these guys were wondering, is this the king that Daniel spoke about? Because if they were from Persia or Babylon, that's the place Daniel was when he uttered these words. All right. The other thing I want to point out, they didn't come to Herod and say, has the king of the Jews been born? They came and asked, where? There's no doubt here in their mind that the king had come. Their question was, where would we find him? That's Matthew 2:2. Where is the one who's been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. So there's my thoughts on the wise men, the magi. I'll throw something else in here. It's not in my notes at all. While this is history, it's still fairly controversial in some ways. But many, many centuries ago, a group of nomadic people from the north of India, up in the steppes, were forced out of their land by some invaders. They filtered south and settled in the northern parts of India. A third of them stayed there. They became the ruling class and the warrior class in India. Two-thirds moved west and settled in the area of Persia, where one-third stayed, and it suggests that they, in fact, were the Magi. The other third moved north, settled in the area of Germany. And during the Second World War, the Germans referred to themselves as what sort of people? Aryans. That's the tribal name. So these wise men may well have been the representatives of a group of people who became the scientists in at least two continents. Wish I could guarantee that, but as far as I can tell, that seems to be fairly accurate. These are the wise men. Second question, what on earth, or what not on earth, was the star? Well, in my reading, I have found three ideas that have been put forward as explanations of the star. One, it was an alignment of the planets. And so when all the planets lined up, they produced much brighter light than a normal star, and that became the star. Oh, okay. Second, it was a meteor making its normal approach through the solar system, travelling from an Earth-based perspective, travelling from the east to the west. So it's a meteor. Third one, it was actually an angel in disguise. I'm not going to make any comment on that third point. I don't see it myself. And if you were to ask me, which theory do you subscribe to? I don't care. The issue is not what it was. The issue is, why was it? What was it doing? And that's what I'm more interested in. What we do know about this star is it was in the sky long enough for people to travel quite a distance. Now, if they're travelling from Persia, generally considered that in terms of preparation, travelling and so forth, it would take at least a year, maybe a year and a half to travel. So that star was in the sky, heading in that same direction for about a year and a half. If they travel from China, it would get a lot longer than a year and a half. So it had a certain duration. Herod asked the Magi about the exact time the star had appeared. You know, third month, fifth day, 10:29 p.m. I mean, you know, I don't know. But there's a specific time this thing was not, and then it was. Let's understand something very clearly here. People from the Middle East and particularly from China had been observing the stars for a very long time. And if it was a meteor, it would have been coming around on a regular basis. When the Magi went back without telling Herod where the child was, and please note that when they came to the house, so get out of your mind the thought that this was the stable. So Jesus had just been born and they arrived and he's in the manger. No, they're in a house. So it's sometime after that. But Herod, when he knew that they weren't going to tell him where the child was, he sent orders for every male child in that area from what age? From 2 years of age and younger to be killed. That's a good king, isn't it? Every 2-year-old or under child, male child in that area was killed. So they must have been travelling for at least 2 years. Second thing, so not only is it in the sky long enough for them to follow, but it moved at a pace sufficiently slow so that they could follow it. And even ask directions, which is what they were doing here in Jerusalem. No alignment of planets is going to do that. It stopped over Bethlehem. I've got to tell you, I'm certainly no astronomer, but as a youth, I was very interested in astronomy, and I can tell you that if there was a meteor or a comet travelling across the heavens and it stopped, the whole world will be on its feet saying, what the heck is this? They don't stop. Next thing, they're going to be someone writing books. It's actually a spaceship. Because only those things can stop. It stopped over a particular town. Now, I don't know how close they were to the house. But the suggestion is that it stopped over the house so they could find this king of the Jews. Well, in Matthew 2:2, we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. So an alignment of planets can't do that. A meteor couldn't do that because it stopped. Let's give up any naturalistic explanations. Could it have been an angel in disguise? Well, you know, could. I'd have to ask why. This is the God who created the heavens and the earth, creating a specialized star to travel for a certain length of time at a certain pace and stop at the right. That's not beyond his ability. I just have to say it's a divine act, a miracle. I looked at the Catholic Encyclopedia, and this is what they have to say about those three theories. Those theories all fail to explain how the star which they'd seen in the east went before them and it came and stood over where the child was. The position of a fixed star in the heavens varies at most 1 degree each day. No fixed star could have so moved before the Magi as to lead them to Bethlehem. Neither fixed star nor comet could have disappeared and reappeared and stood still. Only a miraculous phenomenon could have been the star of Bethlehem. It was like the miraculous pillar of fire which stood in the camp by night during Israel's exodus, or to the brightness of God which shone around the shepherds, or the light from heaven which shone around about the stricken Saul on his way to Damascus. What I can tell you about it is this. Three things. One, had a duration that speaks of supernatural appointment. Two, it had direction which indicated supernatural control. Three, it had a destination which argues for supernatural purpose. This is God's creation. He appointed this thing. We all okay with that? All right, now, what does it mean for us? To me, this is the most important thing of all. There's a few principles in this story that apply to us. Number one, there were many magi in the east, but only a handful of wise men. Only a few followed the star. Otherwise, we'd have a caravan of magi traveling across Central Asia looking for the destination of the star. They followed a star that led them to only one destination. Not Bethlehem. It led them to Jesus. Second thing I want to say is every one of us have a star that we follow. The question is, which star? So think for a moment. What sort of stars could we follow? We might just follow the star of popularity. Anyone watch movies? How many movies can you think of, particularly of teenage girls, where there's the popular girls and the unpopular girls? And the story is about someone who becomes popular or, denounces the popular ones. It's not just teenage girls, is it? The same thing about teenage boys. And not just teenagers either. I'm not saying it's wrong to want to be popular. I mean, if you have this urgent desire in your heart to offend everybody in sight so that the whole world hates you, well, the Lord bless you. You're going to need as much blessing as you can get. You're in trouble. But Is popularity the star that we're following? Second one, I just made a list of things. The star of prosperity. I don't think there's anything great about being poor. But neither is anything great about being wealthy. If that's the star we're following, yeah, well, maybe we might achieve our goal and become really, really wealthy. But how do you define prosperity? We have just sold our house and we are in the process of purchasing another one. And just for maybe a couple of days, we're going to be quite wealthy. And it doesn't matter one little bit. I was talking to someone earlier, and I mentioned when I first got up here, we just had Christmas Day and I had all these grandchildren there. We are wealthy. We've got kids that actually like each other. Grandchildren that like playing with each other. I watch almost 21-year-old grandson spending time looking after his younger sister who was 9. That's wealth. How we define it. But if prosperity is our star, we might achieve it. Will that satisfy us? I put down success, and then put in brackets, however we may define that. Is that our star in life, to be successful? Or perhaps it's marriage. Now, I can remember, I know it's hard to believe this, that I can remember back so far, but I can remember at one stage where I thought the solution to my life's problems was to find a wife. That was a great thing, but it was not the solution. It was actually the cause of some problems too. Because if you're spending time with somebody else, there are going to be times when you have disagreements. Marriage is not the solution. It might be a wonderful part of life. Anne and I have just about to have our 52nd anniversary. I reckon that's success. I've been really wonderful to achieve that. Oh, I wish she was here. She'd be laughing hilariously right now. What about career? You spend so many years at school, so much year in training, getting some experience, and you launch out of a career. And if that's the star of your life, you might have a career and lose everything else. Education. Now, can you notice there's nothing bad about any of these things I've talked about? It's whether or not that's the star that we're following. Music. Or stars of music, stars of theatre, stars from Hollywood. I mean, who are we following? I see so many people wearing, oh, look, if you do this, please forgive me. I see so many people wearing T-shirts that have their favourite group on it. Yeah, which is good. What happens when your favourite group breaks up? Do you throw away the shirt? Well, no, we don't, because we're a bit cheap like that. We're going to keep it. And can you see what I'm saying, though? It's good to have people that you think they're fantastic. Sports people, for example. Fantastic. Let's follow that. And that's good to follow. But if that's the direction of your life, I've got to say, we're shortchanging ourselves. What star are we following? So let me go back to something that I said earlier. Every star has a duration. So the question then is, will the star that I am following last long enough? Now, let me put it in different terms. Has anyone got goals that you've set for yourself? I mean, when you go to school, quite often churches will have a regular goal-setting time, and we think this is what I want to achieve in the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever it might be. So what's goal? So let me tell you about mine. My father died at 52. Heart condition. His brother died at 52. Heart condition. His father died at 52. It became a bit of a tradition in the Eisen family for the males to die at 52. Now, long before I got to 52, I decided this is not good enough. I have a son, and I owe it to my son to break that tradition. So that became a goal of my life. Now, how do you deal with that? Well, I visit a GP on a regular basis. I take some activity. I have a wife who watches what I eat. I try to do a bit of exercise. Exercise is dangerous. I hope you realize that. You know. But the point is, you take steps to live. So in April next year, I'm going to turn 75. Broke the tradition. And I tell my son, now, we've started a new tradition. You've got to do at least as well as I do, if not better. What goal do I have now? Well, I do have a goal, believe it or not. I want to live long enough to see my grandchildren get married. Long-term goal? Well, my youngest grandchild, a granddaughter, is 4. That's a long-term goal. But the point is, we have something that we're following, something we're aiming for, and maybe that'll get us to the point. You know what I'm saying? So, every star has a duration. Every goal has a duration. Everything we want to achieve in life, is it sufficient for the life that we want to have? Second thing, every star has a direction. So where is my star leading me? And is that the direction I want my life to take? Now, I was very tempted. When I was in the army, I was asked to apply for a special arrangement where they would continue my education and guarantee my rank within 5 years. So in my military time, I was a sergeant. They guaranteed within 5 years I'd be a major. And I was tempted by that. I didn't know which way to go, so I thought I'd put out a fleece. So in the application form that I had to write, I put in there, I'm making this application because I believe it is the will of God for me to do so. The adjutant called me into his office. This is not really a military reason. I said, no, sir, I know, but it stands. Well, they turned me down. And I wasn't surprised. See, I had in my mind two choices. I could stay in the army, or I could go to Bible school. Because they turned me down, that made the way clear, I felt. I came back to Australia and went to Bible college. Now, I've often thought about this. What would it be like to have retired 20, 30, 40 years ago as at least a major or a lieutenant colonel? What would it be like? The idea of wearing a uniform, I've always enjoyed that. The first thing that came to my mind, if I had done that, I would never have met Anne. Our three children would not exist. our 10 grandchildren would not exist. I'm glad somebody in the adjutant's office said, no, we don't want this guy. That was the right direction in life. You see what I'm saying? Did I want my life to go in that direction? There's parts of it that it was attractive. But there are certain things that you'd give up in order to achieve that. So is this the direction I want my life to take? Third thing, every star has a destination. So when my star stops moving, where will that find me? And is that where I want to be? I don't think I need to say too much about that one. I think it's pretty clear. I've got a fourth question I've added in here. Will following that star cause history to call me wise or foolish? If I was one of the magi still living in Persia when this story took place, I would be kicking myself saying, you idiot, why didn't you go? What goal is really going to satisfy? So I want to suggest there's only one star that will last forever. One star that will take me in a direction that will satisfy every need. One star that moves at a pace that's suitable for me. One star that will bring me to a destination that will make it all worthwhile. And only one star that will cause history to declare that I was wise. And that's the star that leads to Jesus. That's the message from this story. The Magi fixed their eyes on a star whose duration, direction, and destination was found in Jesus, the King of Kings. I wish the Bible would tell us what happened to those guys after that. I have no clue. But they, at least in one moment of their lives, were at the right place at the right time. And they heard the Spirit speaking to them saying, don't go back to Herod. They were responsive. So if nothing else happened in their entire lives, that was the highlight. And one last comment, and I'm finished. Anyone have a Christmas tree this year? Did anyone decorate it yet? Anyone decorate it with pictures of Herod? The wise men knew better than to go back to Herod. So let's steer clear of the Herods in our lives and follow the star that leads to Jesus. That's my challenge, if you like, to all of us. Lord, lead me in your way, your path, your speed to the place you have chosen for me, that I might bring glory to the name of Jesus and be the sort of person that my family at least will look at and say, he was wise. That's my heart's prayer. The Lord bless you. Thank you.